The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
All right. This is a very special episode 265 of Wheel Bearings. I'm Sam Abul Samad from Guidehouse Insights.
And I'm Nicole Wakelin from the Fast Women Podcast.
And I'm Jordan Golson from, I didn't even know what to say.
Pick one. Pick anyone. Robbie always just picks one.
YouTube.
Okay.
All right, there we go.
YouTube channel.
Jordan Golson from YouTube. Robbie's not with us today. The three of us are actually sitting together. I think this is the first time that we've done an episode with three people all recording simultaneously in the same room.
In one spot.
And we're actually in Bozeman, Montana today. We're here to drive the Jeep Grand or Jeep Wagoneer L tomorrow. But the two of you, Nicole and Jordan, just got back from Vietnam.
Yes.
So before we get to why you were in Vietnam, first of all, have you been driving anything else recently?
Oh my gosh, that was not in my brain, and I'm like bizonkerly jet lagged. Wait a minute, what else have I been driving? I can't even remember what else I've been driving.
All right, well, maybe we can skip that for this week.
Is there Range Rover Sport.
Oh, I know I talked about that. Did I talk about that already?
No, I don't think so. I don't think you talked
about
that.
You guys, I literally have a notepad and a pencil in front of me in a hotel room, and I've had 4 hours of sleep. So this is...
last week, it was just Robbie and I recording when you were in Spain.
I was in Spain.
Or somewhere. Or maybe you were trekking to Indiana or something.
I don't know.
You were on your secret road trip to Indiana.
Okay. All right.
Your emergency road trip. But you haven't talked about the Range Rover. So tell us about that.
Okay. And again, I don't have anything in front of me. Like, I'm not as prepared as I should be. So we drove the Range Rover Sport, and they have... I literally can't talk about this. I don't know enough about the Range. I cannot think of a single thing about that right now.
Okay. Then forget it. We'll talk about it next time.
Can you edit this out?
I know one thing we could talk about is the range of the PHEV. Did they announce the range yet? Because that's the most interesting part of that whole thing to me is because it's about 50 miles.
I have everything written down at home. Let me see if I can.
50 miles. It was about 20
they
on the previous generation?
They did up it. It is an increase. Hold on. The embargo is all lifted on that, right?
Yes.
On the Range Rover stuff?
Yeah, I think the PHEV range, if we're going to talk about anything, is that.
If I had my laptop, I could. Sorry, I'm making you edit and we've
worked. The old one was 19 miles.
Okay, this is all staying in. It's all good.
Oh, great.
They'll love it.
Content.
So this is the real world. I have no idea. I don't have my laptop. I've had no sleep.
So
no, it is. It is. That was the big news, that it does have an increased range, all electric range. It actually
significantly.
Means
it so the prior one's 19.
Yes.
And this one's going to be around 50.
I think it was 50. So I mean, you think
that's a lot of range.
That's Chevy Volt Gen 2 range.
That's a big honking SUV.
It's got a 38 kilowatt hour battery. It's got a huge battery.
And it was very fun to drive. I mean, they had us driving. We had Eurospec versions of everything that we drove while we were over there. Uh-huh. But you still get a pretty good feel for, I mean, you get a good idea of what you're going to get when you get in the U.S. I like the Sport. I find that it was fun. I like that you still have Range Rover capability and Range Rover style and luxury, but it's a little bit smaller. Because also, we're driving this in Spain, where their roads, I want to put it in air quotes, are roughly the size of like our bike paths.
Okay.
So driving something that was a full size, like the actual Land Rover Range Rover, you suddenly feel like you're driving a tank. And it's, I wouldn't want to drive that in a city. I mean, if I was out in the country, sure, cool, that's great. But I think the Sport is a better choice for somebody who's looking for something a little smaller. And it still has not all the luxury. I think there's some features that it doesn't have, but dang, it's close.
Like, it's a different feel.
Yeah, it definitely is sportier because the roads that we were driving it on, it was a pretty long drive route. And there was some highway, there was just some straight roads, and there were some twisties. And we actually ended up with the Range Rover SV something on the twistiest route. And I remember thinking, oh, I really wish I'd had the Sport for that, because the Sport was so much more fun to drive. It was much more nimble. That's the kind of car you wanted to, and it's not a sports car. Great big SUV. But I liked it. I thought it was fun. I was a fan.
And so I think the really interesting thing about it is that the prior generation, the big boy Range Rover and the Range Rover Sport, were separate vehicles, separate platform, separate everything. This time they're the same. And hardware-wise, they're basically identical. The suspension's the same. The steering's the same. The drivetrains are the same. Everything's the same. It's just software-based settings that change. The driver or the steering feel, the way the air suspension is set up, all those things. And it feels like such a completely different car, though all that's really changed is the shape of the body and the interior.
And even the shape, I mean, except for basically being shorter.
Went squoosh.
But the wheel, the wheelbase is identical.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. It hasn't changed at all. It just looks.
Because before it was shorter.
Yes. Because it was a whole different platform. They had different motors, everything.
Yeah.
So now they're the same. And I asked them, would it be possible to have a button that could change you from Range Rover spec to Range Rover Sport spec? Or are there any other hardware differences? And they said, technically, that would be possible. That, like, you could just do it as a drive mode and change everything about how the car feels.
What I wanted was the Range Rover with the Sport's dynamics.
Yes.
That would have been my sweet spot for me. If I could have gotten the Range Rover with the Sport dynamics, and like I said, technically, I suppose they could send it to, what is it, Special Vehicle Operations, mm-hmm. and make that happen for the cost of a small chateau. But
I'm pretty sure Jamal Hamidi could deal with that. I mean, he's still running Special Vehicle Operations at JLR.
In a very polite way, they said, technically that would be possible, but also we wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
But I suspect if you gave them enough money,
I feel like if you,
they could make it happen.
Like, here's a truckload. Would you make that happen for me? That I would.
And that is one of the beauties of being able to afford to buy a premium vehicle like that. Is if you get friendly with your dealer and go up the chain, and you have enough money to spend, they're more than happy to take that money off your hands and give you exactly what you want.
Yeah, they will.
And they had there were two trims of the Range Rover that had, one had like this ebony black trim around the dials, and the other one had this like white ceramic trim. I mean, it wasn't even like an off-white, a slightly winter white. No, it was this brilliant white, and it not only looked fantastic, but it felt like the ceramic on it felt so cool, and it was on the gear shift.
It's the autobiography, or no, the SV.
Yeah.
Has like the all the buttons are ceramic, and there's two colors. You can get them in black or white. And the thing is, the black, it has it's the same ceramic, but it looks just like the black plastic that you can get in the regular one. The white,
it looks so cool.
Pops.
The white looks like you spend a truckload of money to have them for some reason put fancy little trims on your dials. And it's actually like a trim you can buy, but it looked like something that somebody went and paid to have custom done just to make it look different.
It looks like that mug right there. It's like that.
He's pointing at a coffee mug in the hotel.
It's a white coffee mug in the hotel, and it looks like that, just very fancy.
Yeah. Okay.
So that was cool.
Very nice. And when is the plug-in hybrid, or what, I guess when's the plug-in hybrid going to be available in the U.S.?
Early next year.
Okay.
But it's a bit of a moving target, and they wouldn't commit to production numbers. They wouldn't commit to exactly when it was going to get here, just that it's coming soon now.
Kind of like every OEM at this point, if they have it right now, they'll say, we have it right now.
Late and availability.
If they don't have it right now, it's like later. When? Okay. Later.
Yeah. And a fully electric Range Rover, they say, is coming for model year 2024.
Model year 24.
24.
So that implies end of 23.
Yes.
And they said that at the Range Rover launch back in April, and then they reconfirmed that timeline.
So they're sticking to it, which is a certain degree of confidence, because
they may only sell one of them. But, you know, just it's like the Hummer EV pickup. They're good. Yeah, it's on sale.
Yeah.
We sold 100 of them.
I suspect they'll probably try and sell more than that.
I think,
especially in places like California and New York. And
I think it'll be a smash hit.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah, it will be. It's a good car.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
All right. The thing that I was driving also had a plug. It was also a plug-in hybrid. It was the Jeep Grand Cherokee 4xe.
Oh, yay.
And but it was the base model, the limited, which is about 60 grand.
Okay.
And so I think we both talked about the 4xe back in the spring when we did the first drive in Austin.
Mm-hmm.
And so this time I had a chance to spend the week with it and really like it.
Yeah.
I mean, I like the Grand Cherokee anyway. I think for me, you know, the Grand Cherokee is a much more reasonable size than the Wagoneer.
You know, the Wagoneer is so big. I love it, but is it big.
It is really, really big.
Yeah.
And I've always liked the Grand Cherokee. You know, going back to the first generation one, for an SUV with the kind of off-road capabilities that the Grand Cherokee's always had, it's also had surprisingly good driving dynamics on the road. And this one is no exception. Same thing. So, excuse me. The one I the 4xe has a 2-liter turbo 4-cylinder engine with the 48-volt mild hybrid system and an electric motor. An electric motor sandwiched in between the engine and the transmission in place of the torque converter.
Mm-hmm.
Gets about 375 horsepower. It's the same powertrain that's in the Wrangler, which is what you have in your driveway.
Yes.
that Russ drives.
My little toy.
And, I plugged it in every time I came home. So always had near enough to a full charge every time I left the house with it. Did multiple trips to Detroit during that week. A couple times I went to the auto show. We went to, my wife and I went down to Belle Isle, and a couple other things. So a lot of highway driving with it, which is obviously not ideal either for an electric or a hybrid, because right. you're not able to take advantage of the regen. And yet over the week, you know, racking up about 400 miles, I got 30 and a half miles per gallon with
That's-
this thing.
It's and it's not a small vehicle.
No,
when
it's
you
not.
Think about that, that's pretty yeah. impressive fuel economy.
Yeah. Is the range?
The range, driving on the highway at 75, it would do. It's rated at 25. It would do about 18.
And
or
it would,
so
but
on
it
the
would
highway.
Go all the way up to 75 on full electric.
Yes.
The engine never needed to turn
yes.
on.
Yep. Yes.
Which is and, that's pretty good.
Yeah. So like you can put it in electric mode, drive on the highway, you know, for about 18 miles until the battery's depleted, and then it just goes into hybrid mode. I did a range test on my usual loop, which is a mix of some highways, some suburban, like 45, 55 mile an hour roadways, and urban driving, and got 26 miles before it was depleted. So slightly better than what the EPA rated range is. So really impressive vehicle. So if you need something that is, you know, in that midsize, upper midsize two-row class, you know, and you want decent fuel economy, especially, you know, if you want something that you can take, you know, still got great towing capability. You can use it to tow a boat or a trailer, use it for a road trip. You know, got 25 to 27 miles of around town driving on electricity. And, you know, if you plug it in every night, which is what you should do if you're going to buy a plug-in hybrid,
yep.
go ahead and plug it in.
Yep.
Don't waste that, you know, don't drag around several yeah. hundred pounds of battery for nothing.
Spring for the cost of having the
yes.
charger installed, and because otherwise you're,
well, and with a plug-in,
you're wasting your money.
Yeah, well, with a plug-in hybrid, you can actually get by without, you can just plug into a 120 and it'll charge overnight.
Right.
If you have a 240-volt charger.
See, I like having the 240 because then if we run out, like we run out, we do stuff in the morning.
Yeah, and then I have fully charged.
I have a couple miles left on the battery. I come back, I plug it back in. By the time I go out in the afternoon, it's already charged. So I can do like a whole day back and forth where I do far more than the actual just single charge range because I just recharge it so quickly. If you're in and out of your house, you can just go all day, just charge it back up and go right back out.
I'm a huge plug-in hybrid fan, I think, for basically everybody right now. If there were more of them available, it's almost always, if you can charge it, the car to buy. I had a Chevy Volt, the second generation one, which had a 52-mile rated range, if I remember correctly. And in a year, we put 17,000 miles on it, and 15,000 were electric.
Wow.
Yeah. Because in day-to-day driving, 50 miles...
Volt owners.
Yeah, and that's part of why I'm so excited about the Range Rover having that range, because... Most people, like, a lot of people go over 20 miles or 25
right.
miles.
80% of drivers do less than 40 miles a day.
Yeah, so under 50, that feels like the perfect sweet spot to me.
Yeah.
Because then you can do it. And then if you do need to, because range anxiety really is a thing and charging in public is really annoying still, that solves that problem. And it's a great introduction to the EV lifestyle. The main downside is... You can't find them. I had a friend who was trying to buy the 4xe Jeep Grand Cherokee, and he couldn't find one anywhere.
Well, those are still in very limited availability.
Yeah,
yeah, they were late getting them to dealers. They're just really starting to get to dealers now.
And I think it's like the RAV4 Prime. It's so in demand that it's just they fly off a lot,
well,
even faster than every other car.
Yeah. The Wrangler 4xe's are accounting for 25% of Wrangler sales now. So, you know, They are a really good option for a lot of people if you want to go electric, but you're not, whatever your circumstances are, you're not quite able to go fully battery electric yet.
I feel like it's the great happy medium because it gives you a little taste of the electric sort of life. Mm-hmm. You get used to plugging in a vehicle, which is weird the first time you like get out. You're like, well, I gotta plug this in. You get used to the whole idea of it. You get used to, if you want to plug in while you're out and about, the whole like, okay, how do I find a charger? And it's kind of a daunting thing if you've never done it. You have no idea. You're like, but I got to look for chargers. It's not like I'm just going to drive down the highway and see an Exxon station. Like you get used to it with still that security blanket of like, it doesn't matter. I can still go to that Exxon station and fuel up. So I think it's a great way to get into the EV life. So then the next time around you think, okay, you know what? I'll go full EV. And it's also a great way is if you want a vehicle that you have to road trip in, because it's just, generally speaking, not easy road tripping.
Especially if you get kids.
Yeah. And I know you can do it. I know you can do it. I know you can do it. Like, I get it. And they have things that will tell you exactly where you stop and exactly how far to go. And it will map it all out for you. But it removes all the spontaneity from a road trip because you have to plan your stops. And if you don't know that that stop is going to have an open charger and that it works, you have to plan even more carefully. So it's not ideal if you do road trips yet. It's just not. If you want to have the EV part of things for when you're at home and you're in your comfort zone, and then not even pay attention to it if you have to do the occasional long distance road trip, you can do that. It's the best of both worlds at this point.
Can I do one other rant for a moment?
Absolutely.
So that Chevy Volt.
Yes.
Fantastic car. The powertrain, the tech in it was incredible. Came out, I think the second gen came out maybe 2016, uh-huh, the year I bought mine. I was convinced after driving that around for a year that, oh, GM is going to put plug-ins in every car they offer because it's so good. It's like, oh, imagine having a plug-in Tahoe with a 50-mile range, or a Silverado, or an Equinox, or any other vehicle they sell. And they took that plug-in hybrid technology and they put it in...
Nothing.
And killed the Volt.
Yeah, there actually was a plan to do that at one point, somewhere in the mid-2010s. And then they decided, you know, they had started gaining experience with the batteries and realized, you know what? These batteries are actually holding up better than we thought they would. And they decided, you know, we're not going to bother with the hybrids anymore. We're just going to go all electric. And it took them a while to get there. They're still just kind of slowly creeping in there, but that's the plan now. They opted not to spend the money to do the plug-in hybrids.
Do you think it was a good call?
No. I think they should have done some plug-in hybrids because, like you said, you know, especially for stuff like the Equinox and, mm-hmm, you know, a lot of the transverse, a lot of those applications where it would have been pretty straightforward to, especially as the batteries got smaller than what was in the Volt originally. I think they could have done that for at least a few models and given some more options to people. And, you know, they had a really good powertrain there with that system. And, you know, it would have shown consumers that they were more serious about this earlier on. But they opted not to. And, you know,
that's... Well, and so now Jeep is getting into it and doing plug-ins. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder if the success there and what Toyota's seeing with the RAV4 Prime, and people are sort of like, oh, this is really great, especially when you get, you know, because the first rounds of plug-ins, like the BMW and the Volvo, 15 miles, right, maybe. And, like, especially the early Volvo ones, if you went over 40 miles an hour, the engine turned on.
Yeah.
And which wasn't a great experience. And it wasn't really an EV, so you didn't have the torque. The Volt, you put your foot down, that thing would take off.
Yeah, because it had most of its power was coming from the electric motor. They sized the electric motor to basically make it like a pure EV, and had the engine there that on occasion, you know, it might feed a little bit of torque from the engine through the drive system, but most of the time it's just purely electric drive.
Yeah, and it was a generator.
Yeah,
which made it even more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
And that was fantastic. And so,
I don't think they'll go back and do plugs. And I feel like once I complete it, like the order operation is gas vehicle, hybrid, plug-in hybrid, EV. Yeah. And I feel like that's sort of the order for the average person, hybrid, yeah, or plug-in hybrid in the middle, and then EV. So I feel like for an automaker to go back and go, let's go back to plug-in, yeah, hybrid, it's like, I feel like they're...
But
like
is the EV demand going to be there?
I don't think they're all going all in with EVs, whether the demand is there or not.
Right, and that's the thing is I'm not convinced they're going to be able to sell those EVs.
Yeah, I think the demand will be there if they can offer them at the right price, which is going to be the challenge because of battery prices.
They're so expensive. Yeah.
Speaking of right price, does that Jeep Grand Cherokee 4xe qualify for the new tax credit?
Do most of it?
The Jeeps do, I believe.
It may qualify.
It doesn't until the end of the year.
It qualifies for the $7,500 right now until December 31st. After December 31st, it may qualify. We're not sure yet because the vehicle is assembled in North America. The battery is sourced in North America from LG. And what we don't know is what percentage of the components in the battery are North American sourced.
It's such a nitty-gritty.
There's like, it's up to the interpretation of agency it is.
Yeah. Well, the IRS has to publish the rules for how they're going to do the accounting for that. And that's due by the end of the year.
So, I feel literally bad for every person at every OEM. It's like, it's your job to figure out how we're qualified. Yeah. Well, go with God, my friends, because well, this how is are one you going
to
figure that out?
This is one of the things we've been trying to figure out. You know, my company, you know, GuideHouse,
yeah.
is, you know, we've got a list of the cars that are qualify right now that might qualify in 2023.
And then the list of like see you later guys, yeah, not even
and,
close.
And you know, anything that's assembled outside of North America automatically disqualified.
Right. So you'll have cars like the ID4 where some of them are assembled in
Actually
Germany,
they're all
some
they're,
of them.
They're all being assembled in Chattanooga now for
now North because of yes. this, right?
Well no, that was always the plan.
Okay.
So all the I mean there may still be some probably not, but there may be a few in inventory at dealers' lots that were built in Germany. But basically 100% of the ID4s for the North American market are built in Chattanooga now.
I mean, just think about that. What a mess it is. Like, imagine you come with your entire marketing scheme and your pricing and everything you do. You figure everything out. You know what it's going to qualify for a tax credit. Have probably a rough idea based on your sales for how long it's going to be. Like, oh, wait.
Let's change the rules entirely.
We're going to change all the rules. Some guy is going, no, because he worked so hard to get all that planned so it would work. And now everything they planned out the window.
Yeah. Well, so automakers are scrambling now, you know, and they're maybe pulling ahead some of their plans for North American production, like Hyundai.
Right.
They're pulling ahead the construction of their plant, their new plant in Georgia,
but
by 6 months.
But what a shuffle to do all that.
I know it's hard.
Like as if they're not struggling to shuffle enough after the pandemic to just get a car built. Period. The end. Now we got to shuffle. We got to get them built here. We got to do this quickly. Or we lose this, and then we'll lose sales because now we don't get the rebate. And
yeah, well, one of the stories that came up this week was Ford. They've got a whole bunch of vehicles that they're sitting in storage lots because they don't have blue oval badges.
Is that what I saw the headline. I couldn't get the story to load. I was on a plane.
Yeah.
Is that literally what it is?
The supplier of the badge. Well, that's for some of them, not for all of them. Some of them are waiting on badges.
Can't someone just go to the local like embroidery store or whatever? Can you make a bunch of
make
blue
a temporary
labels?
One.
3D print
a little 3D printed Ford label and just
Etsy. My making on Etsy.
Can you Etsy somebody? We need to Etsy 550,000 Fords Ford badges. Okay, thanks. Bye.
Yeah. All right.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia.
Let's move on. So Vietnam. The two of you just got back from Vietnam.
Literally yesterday.
Yes, literally yesterday. So why were you in Vietnam?
We were in Vietnam to experience everything that is VinFast and VinGroup and drive for a hot minute, roughly, the VF8.
Oh, come on. Don't exaggerate. It was at least 8 minutes.
Okay, it was 8 minutes.
VF8 minutes.
and truly, people, it was minutes that we drove these cars. But so it was a week long because of the time change, because it takes a long time to get over there and you lose like half a day. So it was basically a week. We left on a Sunday and we came back on a Saturday. Spent a solid 5 days over there and saw a lot of Vietnam, a lot of what VinGroup is. So VinFast is, Jordan, you have to correct me if I screw this up. VinFast is the car company. VinGroup is the overall like umbrella thing, but VinGroup has VinPearl hotels and VinFast cars, and there's a Vin bus, and there was a Vin medic ambulance we saw, and then there's Vin, what are the buildings called?
Vin homes.
Vin
you can
homes.
Think of it as it's sort of old school General Electric plus Berkshire Hathaway conglomerate with lots of different companies that aren't necessarily affiliated with each other.
It's kind of like the South Korean Kai balls.
Yes, but all one company. Yes, very much so. But instead of being multiple different companies that are affiliated, it's one company that owns everything with all this stuff.
So we went to see, the idea was to see the VF8, which is an EV that's going to go on sale in America. And
eventually.
Eventually, we'll talk about that.
Yeah, and they wanted to show Vietnam, and they wanted to show all of the things that Vin Group does. There's Vin Wonder, which is basically Vin Disneyland. And they have theme parks and all these things.
There's a water park and slides.
There's a water park. And so one of the things they showed us that was interesting was Vin Homes. And it's basically, Vietnam is a rural agrarian country right now. And they want to do in, say, 10 or 15 years what China's done over the last 50 and turn themselves into a modern-ish country with a middle class and manufacturing sector and engineering talent and all these things. And to do that, you basically have to educate your public or your populace, give them a place to live in the cities rather than in the country, and get them jobs. And so what China did as a government over the last several decades, Vin Group is like trying to do on their own in a massive, massive
scale.
And
it's an impressive, it is an impressive scale. So even though this was technically a program for, from my point of view, to be able to drive a car, from Jordan's point of view, to be able to drive a car, there were, and it was a huge number of people. There were only, I think, 8 of us from the U.S. There was a group from Canada. There were people from Europe. And there were a whole slew of influencers who were Instagram famous. And just, it was a very eclectic mix of people. So we finally get to the cars. And the cars were, we truly had a very short time in the cars, and it was a closed, it wasn't a closed course like a track. It was a closed section of road on this little, it sounds ridiculous as I say this, a closed section of road on the island that they pretty much had their one hotel, convention center, whatever on, like a resort island. And they sort of cordoned off this one section, sort of drove straight out of their one building, took a little bit to the right, came back around, took a little bit to the left, and it was done. You got to do that 3 times. And it couldn't have been, truly, honestly, I don't think if you just did the 3 laps back to back, boom, 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 maybe 15 minutes.
Yeah.
It being generous.
So that's what I did for my video, is I did 3 laps. And I think it ended up being about 15
so
minutes.
So about 15 minutes behind the wheel of the car, where you had, it literally drives, think like a T, drive straight out, take a right, pull a U-turn, come back in. And they had a minder with you who sat in the right seat. So you couldn't go by yourself. And he was explaining some things to you as you were going along and there to sort of help you figure out what's what in the car. I have to preface the whole thing by saying they've developed this car in 21 months. 21 months.
Very quickly.
If you think about the time frame it's taking a normal OEM to develop a car, it is years and years and years and years and years to get what we have on the roads today. 21 months. So what they've done in 21 months is incredible. But I think they need a few more months.
Maybe another 21.
And at the rate they're going, if they could continue to develop at the rate they have, 6 months, this could be an entirely different vehicle. But they're saying, depending on who you listen to, who you ask, or even when you ask them, it was a little difficult getting some information at times, that this could be in the U.S. in October or November or December.
Of this year is what they said.
So yeah. It is, today is, I'm looking at my watch, today is September 25th. That is not very far off. And looking at the things that, it's come an incredibly far way for how quickly they've done it, but it feels like it needs some work. I drove 2 different variants, which I didn't know. We just were given one and thought they were all the same. They were not. And so I had this eco version that I drove the first time, and they had a spot where you could get it up to roughly 75 miles an hour. It's 120 kilometers, which I think is about 75. Excuse me. I couldn't get it up to that high in the length stretch of road that we had. I just floored it. I'm standing on that pedal. I did 3, and I'm I cannot get this to go any faster. And the handling was a little off. So when I got back, I said, they asked. And I said, I have concerns. I have questions. And eventually tracked down the right guy who said, no. And he was I didn't get his title. They didn't give me his title. They just sort of described him as the engineer who built it all kind of thing. He was behind it all. So I want that on a business card,
So he was the Vietnamese version of Elon.
He was a Vietnamese version. No, that was
Elon did it all, right?
I guess he was a Vietnamese Elon. Hopefully he wasn't high when he was driving the car with me. But he actually took me out. And he said, look, we're going to take car number 1. And I was like, why car number 1? He's like, well, it's not the same as the one you drove. I'm like, oh, okay. So you take car number 1, which is a he says is right because he knows that this one is right. We take out car number one. He drives it for half the lap to kind of explain things and show me things. And then I drove it for half a lap. Did feel entirely different than the first car I drove. Still didn't feel like it had the, what is it, up to, and this is their tentative specs, up to 402 horsepower. It didn't drive like a 402 horsepower. The first one drove like 100 and something. The second one, I'm like, it's eh, but it still didn't feel it. This is a weird thing to me. So we were talking, I'm like, why does it not feel like it has all the horsepower? When it gets to 80% battery, it begins to throttle back its performance in the interest of saving battery, whether you want it to or not, at 80%. So when I was driving both of these vehicles, one was like in the 50-ish range when I was driving at the first one. The other was like 72 or something. So I'm driving it and it's already throttled back. So as soon as you get to 80%, you're losing that performance, which, correct me if I'm wrong, is there any other vehicle that you know of is an EV that
not,
does that?
Not that. I mean, most EVs, you know, will throttle back performance when you get like below 10% or below
5%. Because you're worried, if you're that low.
And they do that, you know, to extend the range as much as possible.
Right. And the idea is like, it's, and I get it then, because it's like, if you're that low, and especially like, that's pretty low for an EV battery, right? You're thinking, does the person know they have to drive 100 miles? Like, that gets you, that's sort of like a security thing. You don't want to drive like a bat out of hell when you've got 10% of your EV battery. But if I've got 79% of my battery left, I might be driving a little bit more aggressively. So I never actually drove this vehicle to experience the actual full horsepower that it had, because there were none available that had 80% or higher of a battery charge.
Did they give you an indication of just how much they're throttling it back?
No, he couldn't get, he said, from what he said, it was the lower that, the lower your battery goes. And I don't know if it was like literally step down.
So it's proportional to the
right.
The
and I don't know if it's like at 5% it throttles down a little bit more and then another 5. He made it sounded like a curve, you know, that the lower you get, the more it's going to throttle that back, in the interest of preserving your range. But I feel like, well, if you have 80% battery, you got a pretty decent range there.
Now, was that to preserve the range or the durability, or the lifespan of the battery?
He said range.
Okay.
So the guy that I talked to. Now, mind you, there were various people there. There is sometimes a language barrier, which I'll acknowledge. So sometimes you're like, no one's trying to be difficult. We just don't entirely understand each other. His English was fantastic. So I felt like he clearly understood me and I clearly understood him. So I felt like the information I got from him, I was the most confident that I didn't ask one question and get an answer to another by accident, you know? And he was fantastic. He did make me feel better about it, because when I drive that first Eco one, I thought, you cannot tell me that this is what they're selling. And he's like, no, that's the Eco. The higher spec one is an entirely different drive experience. Much nicer, much better drive, but still doesn't feel quite like, it's like, honestly, 6 more months. If it just needs, it needs so much in so many spaces. Now, if you've never driven an EV, if you don't have experience driving an EV, if you've never even driven something with like a plug-in hybrid, where you've experienced what a car feels like driving as an electric, what the acceleration feels like driving an electric, there's a good chance you might not notice a lot of this. Like, I'll be honest, this is something that I noticed. I don't want you to think that everyone, but I think if anybody, if you had a Tesla, for example, and you got behind the wheel of this, because one of the people there did, and I said, will you drive this? He drove one of the laps with me. He's like, wow, this isn't the same. And the problem is the price is $57,000 is where it starts.
Yeah.
With the battery.
That's the U.S. price.
That's the U.S. pricing. So I don't know what you're going to pay elsewhere, but it's $57,000. You are talking Tesla prices.
Uh-huh. Way too high.
It's too high. If they finessed some of this stuff and it was cheaper, then I might feel like it's a great deal. So it's not a terrible car. It just feels undone to me. I can't think of another way to say it. It feels undone. It feels like it needs a little bit more. Even like the infotainment, it's not quite as responsive as it should be. And it almost feels like they haven't, like the graphics, they're not bad. They just don't look modern. Like something doesn't look like a lot of time was spent in it. And
so it feels like an early VW ID4?
Kind of, maybe. That's a way to put it. Yeah, exactly. But it's not the price of that, nor is it it just doesn't feel like it's there yet.
Yeah.
So I'm like rooting for them. I don't want it to sound like I'm like, yeah, I'm rooting for these guys to make a car that succeeds. I feel like it needs a little more time. Even the fit and finish on it. And he did say that this engineer, I'm just going to say lead engineer, I might be making his own title, but this lead engineer, he had said, you know, the ones who were driving were a Vietnamese spec. They were pre-production, that the U.S. spec would be different because our roads are different. And it's very common to have like Euro spec and U.S. spec of the same vehicle will drive very differently because their roads and our roads, what Europeans expect from a car.
Might tune the suspension differently.
Right. So they tune things for their audience. So he said it'll be tuned differently. So I'm like, I can forgive some of that, like very different experience you're going to have in Vietnam. But like the handling was just not as crisp as I wanted it to be. And the steering wasn't, you know, the suspension was not what I wanted it to be for a car that's nearly $60,000. You know, and they said that, I asked him what he benchmarked against. He said he benchmarked against the Hyundai Ioniq 5. And I asked him, do you think it's there? Do you think you got it? And he sort of paused and he said, well, I think we're close. And I think that's, but I think that,
Jordan's,
you know,
shaking Jordan's his
shaking
head.
His head. No. But I think that's how I would feel about that. That is when he said, I think we're close. That's what I think about the VF8. They're close. They need to spend a little more time. And I really wish they had said to me, we were going to have it out in October. We're going to make it April.
So if you're going to compare this against a Hyundai, would you compare it, would you say it's closer to an Ioniq 5 or to, let's say, a 1993 Sonata?
Can I say between the two somewhere?
It's like a 98 Sonata.
Yeah. But it's not horrible. It really isn't horrible. Yeah. It just is not quite there for the price. And they have so much vested in this. I want to be like, can you guys just put it back in the garage for a few more months and keep working on this? Because you've clearly done so much in 21 months. Give yourself another 6 working at this pace, and you can take care of a lot of this. But if you put it out there now, people who like own Teslas and stuff, who own EVs, who've been driving EVs, who've been driving around in $60,000 cars, they're not going to be thrilled.
It needs to cost, I was telling them $20,000 less. I'm going to revise that to $25,000 less.
Yeah.
If so they sold it for
That would put it at about $30,000.
Yeah. 33, something around there. I think you'd be getting an awful lot of car for your money because it's a good sized vehicle.
It is a good sized vehicle.
But it's a new car maker. There's a lot of things that need to be polished. But if you put it at that price, and you can get 250-ish mile range, we're not sure what it's going to work out to, because mm-hmm. they're quoting estimated European spec ranges. So there's nothing based in reality there. But that's an interesting value proposition, because that's like saying, okay, the early Hyundai cars that came to the U.S. were bad. They were not good cars.
They were not.
But they were dirt cheap.
Right.
And so you're like, how much will you sacrifice on things being super perfect and polished if it's really cheap? And it's like, boy, I can forgive a lot of things at a much lower price than I can at $57,000, which is starting, what, $13,000 more than an Ioniq 5
starts.
Yeah,
see, that's the thing.
You cannot get away with it.
You could, like exactly what Jordan said, I could forgive a lot of this if the price wasn't so high. This isn't a price that lets you forgive that kind of stuff. This price, you don't expect that. You expect a certain quality. And unless there has to be significant changes between now and the, and I know, like I said, these are pre-production Vietnamese spec, but there have to be some pretty big leaps forward. Or I think people in the U.S. to buy into a company that's brand new from a country that the U.S. isn't super familiar with, products out of Vietnam, and to take a chance on it, that's a pretty big chance to take. And I feel like they're standing behind it, and I feel like they're throwing tons of money at this. Like, I have no doubt the finances and the will to do this is there. The company really, really wants this to work. They've
even committed to building a $5.5 billion assembly plant.
Right? So they are committed to making this work. I just feel like it's not quite ready for prime time, and I'm hopeful that by the time this, whether it's October, November, December, or maybe even later, when it arrives, if they can fix some of these things, I think it's a good car, but I just don't think it's there yet. I think it needs some help.
Yeah,
I was going to say there's 2 points about what you just brought up. One is that they have committed to building a plant in mm-hmm. North Carolina, which they want to include cell production in that as well. And they are remarkably vertically integrated for a car maker. I think outside of maybe Tesla, nobody's trying to do as much as they are. And on one hand, that's a really big thing for them to do. On the other, if they can pull it off, it's going to put them in a really good position to be able to make a lot of cars and not be stuck waiting on battery partners like pretty much every other OEM is except for Tesla. And so that's interesting. The other thing is that as best we can tell, the money is real. Vingroup makes a lot of money. They have a lot of money. The founder got started, I believe, selling ramen noodles in Ukraine 25 years ago. Sold that company, went back home to Vietnam and said, I want to start a company and bring my country into the 21st century. And now has Vin World and Wonders and buses and all that.
And everything.
And all
there's
that
a university
stuff.
Too. We forgot there's a Vin
There's
university.
Vin University. Because and they're focusing and they've partnered with Cornell and
University
Penn,
of Pennsylvania. Yeah. Yeah.
To design curriculums, and they're focusing on IT, computer science, AI. I think they have a new nursing program that they're doing.
And it's this beautiful, unbelievable campus that yeah. feels like the an Ivy League equivalent in an Asian university. It's yeah. absolutely beautiful.
If you said, what are the things you need to do to drag your country into your third world country into the 21st century, you'd make a list, and basically they're doing all of them. Mm-hmm. So they're doing the right things. And unlike many other EV startups like Faraday and basically all of the ones that aren't a major OEM who run into fundraising problems because it costs a lot of money to create a new EV. And you say, oh, well, I've got $2 billion. Okay, well, that's a nice start. Where are you going to get the other 10? I think Vingroup has the money to make this dream a reality. And they're going to try and raise lots of money on the private markets, and they'll probably be successful doing that because that cash is there to back it. Which that alone, I think they've got the runway to hopefully figure this out and improve the car and get it to a place where it can go on sale. And the VF9, which we've barely talked about, is the larger one. It's a three-row, and right. it would be, I think, the only three-row full EV other than the Rivian, which isn't selling in any volume at all. And so if they could actually deliver that in the U.S. next year,
I feel like
that's
that,
really
and honestly, I feel like that car, when that comes out, so two things, because that comes out, do they give us a date on that? It's just next year, right?
I heard a date of December.
Okay.
December of this year?
This year. They said, oh, we're going to put VF8s and VF9s on the boat. And I'm like, okay, no, you're not.
So let's assume for a second the VF...
Next year sometime.
We're going to make stuff up. The VF8 comes out first. It's out there for a little bit, then the VF9. And if they learn from however it is that the VF8 is received here in the U.S. and whatever their feedback is, because they were listening to all of us, which is really nice.
They did ask us a lot.
They were asking us, there were a lot of not automotive journalists there and a lot of journalists there, and they were asking us, they really wanted to know. So you genuinely felt like they wanted to know what we thought.
Including the CEO of VinFast.
Yeah.
They at one point she was in the car with one of our colleagues, and he was not being very nice mm-hmm. about their car.
Because she kind of asked him to.
She asked him to, and they were trying to get her out of the car to not talk to him, and she slammed the door in her handler's face pretty much and said, no, I'm going to listen to what they're saying.
So, but I feel like if they take what they learned from what people have said to them that were honest with them on this drives, because there's been four of these that they've done, and then they take that what they've done so far with the VF8 and continue to improve that, and then if the VF9 gets yet additional, and we didn't drive that, mind you, we just looked at it on the outside, we didn't even see
it. It looks
great.
Yeah.
If they take all
they
that,
showed
and
it
they,
in LA last year.
Yeah. If
good.
They apply it to the VF9, the VF9 could be really quite good, and it would be the one that here in the U.S., where we like big cars and big, huge things, could do very, very well.
And I think they said the VF8 to VF9 split in Europe was 60% VF8 and 40% VF9 for reservations. And in the U.S., it was split. So it was 60% the larger one, 40% the smaller one.
Which makes sense.
Which makes 100% sense.
Right? The biggest one possible is what's going to sell the... I mean, we're here to drive a Jeep Grand Wagoneer L that's longer than a boat.
And you know that if that was a full EV, people would be going bonkers for it. But it's not.
So it sounds like from our conversation earlier, sounds like a lot of the issues may be software related. So, and this is a brand new vehicle coming out in 2022. So, obviously they can just, push out OTA software updates on a weekly basis to fix it all, right?
Well, So one would think.
Theoretically, yes.
In theory, you could push out software updates. It would take care of very many of these things. You can't just yet. When will you be able to? One of the people said literally someday, within a year or two. And he's on camera saying it a year or two. So we had that moment of, did we just hear that right? And it's like, yep, we heard that right. So I'm hoping somehow that was a mistake. Because if the answer is really a year or two, that's not good. Then they can't fix anything in this. Things that are relatively easily fixable, you can't easily fix. Because if you can't push an over-the-air update...
I mean, if they can't do OTA updates right now, at the very least, all the cars they sell up to that point will have to come in to a service center or somewhere, because they're not going to have franchise dealers.
Right.
To be flashed locally first.
Correct.
Before they can even support OTA updates, assuming that the hardware can support it.
Correct. And I don't know that. They didn't say, like, the hardware's not there. They were just like, we're not quite ready. So I'm not even sure if it's maybe literally just the hardware's in there. Mm-hmm. And it's just the software isn't quite there yet, you know, to do it, which is kind of what my sense was. That's what I'm hoping. Oh, please, Lord, let that be what they're saying. Because if you need actual hardware you got to put in there, that's another level of complication, I guess.
So
you can't necessarily update everything over the air at this point. So that's, again, we just need a little more time. Just, like, push that, bump those dates. And it's horrible to have to bump the date when you want a vehicle ready at a certain time, mm-hmm. and it's not, right? Nobody wants
especially
to
when it's
that.
Your first product.
Right. You want to say, we're delivering on X, and that's when we're going to deliver it. You don't want to say, oh, it's X plus 7 months. But I really think deliver, you know, you see OEMs, we've all seen them, even the big ones, rush a vehicle a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it gets you, like, we can feel that it's been a little rushed. Don't rush it. Like, give yourself some time.
Like the Cadillac Lyriq.
I was just thinking that.
Yeah.
Yep.
I
mean, and the Lyriq, corners they cut.
Great vehicle from a hardware perspective.
Yeah.
But the software, when we drove it in June,
see?
Was not ready.
Right?
See? But I talked, you know, the following week I ran into Dan Nicholson, who's the head of electronics and software at GM. And he told me that they already had 2 OTA updates queued up to go out before the vehicles were even delivered to customers.
So see, they're already see that kind of thing. Like, if you have some time,
yeah.
and you can do an OTA update, you can fix that stuff. I feel like VinFast needs to do that. And the thing is, you genuinely feel like there's a desire to do something really cool here and to do something that will be very good for the Vietnamese people, right. and the economy and pulling the country forward, which is something, how can you not like that? How can you not root for that, for the people? Because it's, you know, big companies are big companies, but somewhere down the line, a big company is a whole bunch of people.
Mm-hmm.
And you're rooting for the people to actually have some success here. And I am. I want it to be successful. And I think that they genuinely want to see it work.
And ideally, you know, every country should be economically successful.
Right.
You want people to have a good standard of living.
Exactly.
And, you know, being employed and making products that people want to buy is great.
Yeah. Is a good thing.
And Apple is ramping up investment and production in iPhones are going to be built in Vietnam soon. They're making AirPods there currently.
This Pixel 6 Pro is already built in Vietnam.
Yep. Yeah. So plenty of things being built in Vietnam. And it's also worth noting that VinFast, it's their first EV, but it's not their first car.
Right.
They've been selling cars. Now, they are a new car maker. I think they've only been building cars since 2017, 2016,
something like that.
But they've sold a number of models, including several in partnership with BMW that use the platform, I think, of the X5. I think the 5 Series, they made a car off that as well. And they were lots of them in Vietnam.
Yeah,
we saw
VinFast
cars everywhere.
Yeah.
So, but they have said, and this is an interesting point they made, they are the first internal combustion automaker to say, we're stopping internal combustion production, we're going all EV.
Switch.
I think in the world. And I think that's probably...
Well, they're not the first to announce it. But
they're the first to do it.
The first to do it,
think they have actually stopped production of all their ICE vehicles. Yeah. Or they're
and
about
that was
to,
one of the things...
Which is interesting.
Because they've been doing ICE vehicles, the center console where you have, like, your drive, you know, have all your buttons for... It's actually out of one of their ICE vehicles. So it like, they didn't make anything different. Like, there are little things that drive
don't reinvent
nuts.
The wheel.
Well, don't reinvent the
but
wheel.
But it's terrible, so
but it,
maybe
but
you should
it's
reinvent
terrible.
It.
Your wheel is shaped like a triangle. Maybe make your wheel shaped like a circle. The wheel is still shaped like a triangle. So it's like little things. Again, these are little things, but I think the problem is when you collectively take all these little things, your experience in the day-to-day isn't going to be quite what you want it to be. And you're not going to create the raving fans that you want to create once they own your car.
And that's, you know, in 2022, that's a tough place to be in because there are so many really good vehicles on the market. You know, in 1987, when Hyundai came into the U.S. market, a few years later when Kia did.
Yeah.
You know,
different market.
There were still a fair number of brands that were not great, to put it mildly. You know, and the competition has gotten much, much tougher.
Right.
Now, granted, you know, Tesla has had their challenges with
absolutely.
Quality control and
absolutely.
Fit and finish on their vehicles. And they have, you know, and they started from nothing, you know, and, you know, in 15 years, they've gotten pretty far along.
Yeah.
And they also have never delivered anything on time.
Correct.
So, you know, I mean, if Tesla can be late, you know, 3-4 years or more, 5 years, you know, in the case of the Semi and the Cybertruck, you know, then
VinFast can
certainly afford to be 6 to 12 months late.
I think Tesla showed, now granted Tesla has Elon, but it showed that people don't necessarily get as bothered by stuff that we as car journalists get bothered by when it comes to things like fit and finish.
I think a lot of the fit and finish, I'm hoping, like, some of the things, though, I think I would genuinely be bothered by, probably not the console thing, except that there's nowhere to put your stuff. Like, I don't like that I can't, like, toss my wallet anywhere. There literally is nowhere to put your stuff on that's in our console, which drives me nuts in my, like, every car I've ever had and always has. Like, I don't have to be doing this job.
Never enough storage, except, I think, the, like, F-150.
Yeah.
It's basically, like, the only thing with enough storage.
You can never find spots to put your stuff. But some of it is very glaring that I think if you're a $60,000 car buyer, the leather quality doesn't feel right. It's, like, it's wrinkled. It wrinkles. There's weird creases. Like, it's not properly pulled into place. You're going to see that if you're buying a $60,000 car. You don't have to be one of us. Like, there's a weird bump in the seat, you know?
76 in the case of the
F9. So I think there's some, and there's very many things you won't know. So like I said, if you haven't driven an EV or you haven't driven a car that's at that price point, you definitely aren't going to see a lot of stuff. But if you're coming from that and going into this, you are going to feel a lot of this stuff.
Another thing, it's so if $57,000 plus, you know, whatever it works out to be, you can get a C40 recharge from Volvo, which is an incredible EV. And granted, it's a little bit smaller, but it's stunningly beautiful.
Oh my God, beautiful.
The blue paint, the whole that. Like, if you said, oh, which one do you want? I'll take that Volvo all day, every day.
And it
delivers the 402 horsepower all the time.
And it's a little rocket ship.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's fantastic.
This is the key
part. So it's got to be $20,000 less.
If you make it cheaper, suddenly the person who can't afford the Volvo has an alternative. But if you can afford the Volvo, that's the better call.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know? Pretty much.
And you know your Volvo dealer is going to take care of you.
You have a little, and you know that there's a lot of Volvo dealers.
So it needs to be the Dodge Journey of EVs.
There you go. I like it.
Yeah, the Dodge cheap.
Yeah.
It's not great, but it gets you from point A to point B. It's got a decent enough range, and it's an entry level large EV.
Yeah.
That's what it should be.
And once they figured out that the radio needs to be on the top, not at the bottom of the center stack.
It's going to be great. If they can get through, if the VF8 and VF9 launch and they manage it enough, and like you said, the factory year, they're committed to the U.S. market. I'm almost feeling like this is going to be like, well, maybe these don't do quite what they thought they were going to do, but then the VF10 comes out in a year or whatever, whatever the next one, they take what they've learned from this one and they do something like what Hyundai and Kia did. We were this really cheap, nothing, brand was behind. Now they're really, really, really good. The VinFast could do the same thing.
Yeah. All right. Cool. So that's the VinFast VF8. One more topic I want to hit before we answer just a couple of listener questions.
Okay.
And that is, did you happen to see the very short Volvo EX90 presentation on Wednesday? No?
I did not.
I read a little bit about it.
Okay. I mean, they had a live stream with Jim Rowan, their new CEO. It was only less than 15 minutes long.
Okay.
And it was focused on, they didn't show the vehicle in its entirety yet. It's going to be unveiled on November 9th. And this is the all-electric replacement for the XC90.
Okay. Which I love.
Yeah. It's going to share its platform with the Polestar 3, which is going to be revealed sometime in October, I believe. So these are, upper midsize SUVs, crossovers, all electric. And the focus of this live stream they did, well, they streamed it on YouTube, but it was all pre-recorded, so it wasn't really live. But anyway, the focus of it was on some of the safety stuff. They talked about the sensor suite for the driving stuff. It's going to have the Luminar LiDAR sensor on there, lots of cameras, lots of radars. And they'll give us more details on the capabilities. It's going to, from the conversations I've had with Volvo and Zenseact and Luminar over the last several months, it sounds like it's going to be launching with a hands-free driving assist system like Super Cruise, Blue Cruise, and then gradually increasing the capability over time as they reach enough confidence in the safety of it.
So I think it should be the first vehicle with a LiDAR standard.
No, actually, the Lucid Air has LiDAR standard.
Oh, okay. Never mind. Sorry.
And And then there's also the Mercedes S-Class and EQS have it. I don't know if it's not only standard. Yeah, it's an option as part of the Drive Pilot package. But what was the other thing that was really interesting, they talked about interior sensing. So they're going to have a couple of IR cameras on the inside. And, you know, we've had this for a while now, you know, from GM, Ford, and BMW and others using it to do driver monitoring. But they're going beyond just making sure the driver is watching the road. They're also, it's going to be running, as I understand it, it's going to be running all the time, not just when you're using the hands-free system. And looking for visual distraction, you know, if you're looking away from the road, if you're looking down your phone or something, and looking for drowsiness and other factors that might impact your ability to drive safely. And then something else interesting that they brought up, and this is something I've talked to some other people about, they referred to it as, excuse me, cognitive distraction. So I'm sure there's been times when you've been on a long road trip, like when you were coming back from Indiana, when your eyes are on the road, but you've been driving for several hours and maybe your attention is not 100% on the task at hand.
You start to zone out a little bit at a certain point of highway driving.
Yeah, so they can call it cognitive distraction. And I'm not sure exactly how they're recognizing this.
I was going to say, how do you check that? I mean, if I'm literally distracted, it could see my eyes are looking elsewhere. How does it know your brain is looking elsewhere?
I'm not sure yet. But I think there's certain characteristics they could be looking for, like combinations of, like, if your hands are on the wheel, but they're not really following the road.
Not responsive enough. You're too static.
Yeah, and your head is too static. Your eyes are too static. Like, you're just looking off into
the distance.
Like
a very clever driver monitoring.
Yeah, yeah. Huh. So they're trying to get smarter with the driver monitoring.
Okay.
And really make it more effective.
Yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to trying this out because I think, you know, anybody that's honest, that's driven for any length of time, will admit that they have been in that situation.
Oh, what is it? The highway hypnosis. You're just staring at the highway and you're driving. That's that. How did I just drive 50 miles? Where am I now? Like, when you know you have 175 miles in a given road, you're not really seeing what's
out. You sort of forget where you were.
You're just kind of going because your brain is thinking about 80 other things and you're just driving down the highway. So, you know.
So hopefully this system can actually work.
Well, that would be scary. How often is it going to notice? I feel like, how often have I done that? Or how often are you driving and you don't, like, you know where you're going and you're paying attention, but your brain is half paying attention?
Well, a lot of the time, you are paying attention. You just don't remember that you were.
Yeah.
Because you're like, I don't need to remember the last 5 miles of driving straight.
Right.
And so your brain sort of discards it. And what you do is you forget what you've been doing for the last 5 minutes. But if something had happened,
you'd have been there.
You were there. And so there's a difference between being distracted in an unsafe way. And versus, one that's just like, wait, I zoned out for, I daydreamed for a little bit.
Now I'm a little scared of this tech because I feel like we're getting into AI. Like, Nicole, I sense that you are no longer really focused on the road. Like,
well, and what, you know, what they're going to do is, you know, if they'll alert you if they think that you're perhaps not entirely with the program, and if you don't respond to the alerts, then it will slow the car down and bring it to a stop. And if necessary, if it thinks you're incapacitated,
call for help.
Yeah.
Which is a lot better than the alternative of just careening into a guardrail.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right?
So
I guess that would be, if it just nudges you and says, hey, you paying attention? You're like, yep, car, I'm okay.
And there are a few cars today that will, you know, if you do have a medical emergency or something like that, it'll keep you in the lane and it can stop the car.
Super Cruise will do that.
Yeah.
If you don't respond to requests,
it doesn't just turn
back on the wheel.
It assumes something's sort of gone wrong there. Yeah.
Mercedes, I know, does that as well.
Yeah. So it'll start slowing the car down at 40 miles an hour. It'll turn on the hazard lights.
Yeah.
And then when it comes to a stop, if you don't respond within about 20 or 30 seconds, you know, it'll come on, the thing will come on and say, are you okay? Do you need help? And if you don't respond, then OnStar will call for help.
Yeah, which I think is really smart.
Actually, because
a lot of people do have medical emergencies. And
I mean, you could have a heart attack or a stroke or, you know, go into a diabetic coma.
And a lot of cars are good enough today to keep you within your lane at the very least.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think you get onto, and like things like you said about the occupant sensing, you know, they might be able to tell that, oh, you've slumped over.
Yeah.
You know, you got a camera watching the driver, and all of a sudden you're like leaning over, passed out, and it might realize immediately, oh, there's a significant problem. We need to stop the car right away.
Right.
You know, and I think anything that can advance like that is fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Let's answer a couple of listener questions.
Okay.
First one came from Car Snob.
I like that car snob.
well, it's spelled with two A's. Well, three A's. He's probably a
so
Saab
fan. So
he's
a car snob from like Boston or something?
Or he might be a Saab fan.
Okay. Oh, car. Oh, okay.
Might be a Saab stop.
Oh, geez. That's a good pun.
how can EVs be economical long-term, like 20 years, compared to an ICE when you have either a $10,000 battery replacements or obsolete battery systems to deal with? As a DIYer, I've paid way less than $1,500 in routine service in 12 years for my cars.
Well, you eliminate a lot of the service on an EV because you don't have all the...
Well, really, the only thing you eliminate compared to modern cars is oil changes.
Okay, so you look at oil changes.
Transmission. Well, I guess transmissions are sealed on a lot of those new cars.
Yeah, most new cars don't need transmission service for 100,000 miles.
And so really what you're doing is you're getting rid of oil changes.
Yeah.
And you are paying for electricity rather than fuel.
Right.
Or gasoline, usually. Yeah.
But I don't think I'm sure EV batteries will continue to get better, but I don't know that I would call them, like, what did he say? Did he, it was 20 years? Is
10,
that what he
10
said?
Years.
You're making
10
a
years.
Big assumption that, and he also said a $10,000 battery replacement. You're making a big assumption that you're going to need to spend $10,000 on a battery replacement.
Well,
yeah. I don't think you will.
Batteries are getting better and better.
The reality, with the exception of the early Nissan Leafs, which have air-cooled batteries, most EVs, the batteries have held up better over time than they originally thought.
They
have. So most of them, after 10 years, you've still got 85-90% of the original capacity, if not more.
And if you do have a problem on most of the new ones, you don't need to replace the entire pack.
You can
just replace one module.
Yeah.
Rather
so
than
it's
all
no
of them.
Longer like everything. It's just a tiny little piece, which makes it much more affordable.
Of course, that part is going to go away as we move to structural battery packs.
Yeah.
Because you're going to get rid of the modules. But that's a story for another day. And also, the reality is, unlike Car Snob here, most people are not DIYers. They don't change their own oil.
Right.
I mean, if they're lucky if they take the car into a quick oil change place.
And after this year, that question becomes very different depending on what the price of gas is.
Mm-hmm.
If the average price of gas is $3 a gallon, your turnaround is not that good. If your average price is $4, $5, $8, which after this year, I think you could easily see how gas in the U.S. could get to be that expensive.
Yeah.
Then your turnaround, even with the price of electricity going up, that price doesn't vary as much as gasoline prices do.
Uh-huh.
So it'll be predictable, and then you can get your buyback way faster, especially if you don't go and buy a $100,000 Rivian.
Yeah.
If you buy a $40,000 Hyundai Ioniq or a $32,000 VF8
or a $26,000 Bolt,
Chevy Bolt, which is probably the best bang for the buck in the entire car market right now.
So there's a lot of options though, because they're so affordable, because you don't have to buy a super expensive EV. You can buy a relatively affordable EV, further making it long term good financial proposition.
And so for a commuter car, which I think is the perfect use case for any EV right now, as a second car. Just the gas savings alone, you're going to get there.
Yeah.
All right. The other question.
And it'll get better in 5 years.
Yeah.
Yes.
Ask that question again in 5 years, the answer is going to be even more in favor of the EV.
Yeah. All right. The other question is from Rick Thweet. And I want to thank Rick for the separate note with the pronunciation guide, because he's sent us a few questions in the past. And I wasn't quite sure how to pronounce his name. So it's
Thweet,
Rick,
like Thweet.
How's
like,
it spelled?
Thweett.
Oh, yeah, I would need to have that.
So tweet like tweet.
Yes, exactly.
Perfect.
So Rick asks, in fact, his Twitter username is Tweeter.
All right. I'm here for that.
Tweeter.
Okay. So is there a car, new or used, that you wanted to buy that got away? As a broke college senior in 1996, I drove past the local VW dealer that had a Harlequin Golf sitting out front. Had I the money at the time, it would have been an instant buy. So what was your one that got away?
Did I have a car that got away? I don't know if I've had a car that got away.
I have an answer to this.
Let's hear it.
He looks sad, folks. He literally looks like
really,
he's
it's
conflicted.
Painful. It's what's even worse is that it's a car that I had and then it got away. And the short version is that I had a Alfa Romeo 4C Spider.
You told me the story about before.
I had a 2-year lease on it, and when the lease was up, which is its own nightmare of a story for trying to return the lease of an Alfa Romeo 4C, but I was getting divorced, and there was just no way to buy it out at the end of the lease, and I had to give it back. And that is, to this day, the most fun car I've ever driven. Of all the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of cars that I've driven, it's so pure, manual steering, the noise, the top comes out, it was unbelievable, and in this beautiful tri-coat red. So that was the one that literally got away. And so I have a dream that someday I'm going to do like Papa John and find that car and put the VIN into Carfax and go track it down and buy it back. And hopefully, I put 7,000 miles on that in 2 years, which for a 4C is an astonishing amount of mileage, and had zero mechanical problems.
Okay, I can think of my one that got away. If that counts, it's the car you had that you had to.
Yeah, I think that's that.
But I do have the one that got away, and I don't think it's a cool car necessarily, but I love this little car. So when the new Beetle first came out, it was just the new Beetle, and then they came out with a turbo, and it was new, and I got a bright yellow new Beetle turbo, and that's what it was called at the time. I know they've changed the name.
I think it had the turbo and the same script that they had on Porsches, right?
Yes, on the back.
Turbo badge.
Is that the one with the little spoiler that would pop up?
Yes, yeah. I got the worst ticket of my life in that car, looking to see. So the spoiler, you couldn't, it came up, was
80 miles an hour? It was fast.
Okay, so I hit the speed on a road, and it was just slightly more than the speed limit, I will admit. However, I was looking to see it because the sun was going through the window just the right way, so I could see the shadow of the car on the road to rest. I was watching for the spoiler to pop up, so I was not paying enough attention to my right foot. So I may have been going a little bit more than the required speed, and I'm not just a skosh people, a slight oversight. The police disagreed a little bit. So it was the worst ticket I've ever gotten, but it was the coolest, and I can still vividly remember looking out the window going to my husband, "Ross, look, the spoiler's up," and then turning back and going, "Oh fuck!" I like a flying by and realized how fast I was going. But I loved that little car. It made me so happy. It was so much fun to drive. Everyone was loving it. It made people smile.
It was basically a round GTI.
It was wonderful. But then I got it before I had kids. I did not give it up with child number one. I managed to wrangle child number one into the back of that car. But then I was pregnant with child number two, and the day I had to swap it was because I was too pregnant to get child number one into the car. I didn't have the space to get child and me. And I was like, and I remember being in the dealership and getting a new car, and I was like pregnant and sobbing. Like, I'm really happy with my new car. I'm missing my Beetle. I was so sad. I felt so bad for the salesman. This poor guy's probably like, oh my God, worst day ever. So yeah, so that was my one that got away. I would have kept that car. I might still have had that if I didn't have kiddos and didn't have to worry about getting them into the car. I loved that thing. It was the most fun car ever. I miss it.
Is there a new car equivalent to that, I wonder? Was there anything that would fit that?
That would make me happy?
No, but just sort of takes, like, it's so iconic. And people remember, we talk about the little silly spoiler, and it's been 20 years. Is there any car that sort of...
Is there a car like that
is
now?
Special like that? Yeah, I don't know.
Is there anything that's that unique and different and has its own little personality to it?
I don't know. I can't
think of anything.
Can anyone I would love to have a listener if they have an equivalent to that.
Yeah.
Do you have a car
What's
that has
the 2022 equivalent
the 2022
of a
equivalent
Beetle.
Of a Turbo Beetle when it was new and it was like fun and cute and adorable... And just had so much personality that you just...
Because back then you had the Mini that had just come out around then, and that had that sort of same fun, exciting...
I like my Beetle better.
100%.
So you know.
100%. But just sort of like cars that are interesting like that. And I feel like we don't have that right now.
Do we not have a cute, fun little car right now?
Yeah, they still got the Mini, but you know, it's grown bigger and...
It's not...
I don't
feel like
it was special back then. It's not as special now.
Right, it's been around for 20 years.
Yeah, what's our special? What is the car that everybody would see and make you... Smiling.
Someone's going to write in, they're going to say Tesla Roadster, and it's going to be like, okay.
Yeah, okay.
That doesn't exist.
But right now.
No.
Right now.
And it's going to be cheap, and what's affordable?
Yeah.
I would even say, even if it wasn't affordable, let's just say, I mean, cause, like, even
I think
if it was
in terms of fun cars, you know, like what?
GR86.
Maybe Veloster which is now dead.
Yeah.
You know, but that's not, that doesn't have the cultural zeitgeist of the Beetle.
Yeah. I loved that.
Because everybody had the Beetle.
I was the first Turbo Beetle that was sold in New Hampshire because I gave them my whatever, $50 and put my name on the list. Like, they announced it on a Tuesday, and like Wednesday morning I was in there and I waited, and the very first one that came in, I said, unless it's a color I hate, I'm going to take it. And it was yellow. And I'm like, yep, I will be there.
Okay. Well, I got two cars and it's actually interrelated. So when I graduated from college in 1990, all those many years ago, I wanted to buy myself a new car.
Okay.
Because I was driving an 84 GMC S15 pickup truck, through college.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to buy a new car. And my short list was the Mitsubishi Eclipse Turbo.
Okay.
Which I knocked off the list early. And then the Miata, which was brand new at the time. You know, it was first model year, 1990.
Yeah.
And Mustang 5-liter LX.
Okay.
And I ended up, going like, Miata, Mustang. It's like, well, it's going to be my primary car. I'm going to be driving it year-round. I don't know if I want to be driving the Miata in the wintertime. So I went with the Mustang.
Okay.
And I bought 5-liter LX Mustang.
Yes.
And it was like the notchback. So it was the lightest Mustang you could get with the most powerful engine at the time. And it was a hoot to drive. I had that car for 8 years. Loved it. And that was the one. The Miata got away at first. And then 8 years later, the Mustang got away.
Aww.
Because, had small kids.
Yes, yeah,
with you. It was
the
a pain in the ass to get
them. Cars, the dang stinking kids.
Pain in the ass to get them in the backseat.
Yes.
I eventually got my Miata. Got my 1990 Miata 5.5 years ago. Still have it. I will have it probably till the day I die.
Hopefully not in it.
Hopefully not in it. But hopefully till the bitter end, I will have that car, and hopefully I'll be able to drive it until the very end. And love that car. And I regret not getting it, but I'm also glad I got the Mustang back then.
Yeah.
But what I regret is getting rid of the Mustang at the time when I did, because I needed the money for the down payment on the new car that replaced it. I still wish I had that Mustang today. I'd love to still, even though it's nowhere near as fast as contemporary Mustangs, it was so much fun to drive.
You could have driven it in the Stampede.
I could have driven it in the Stampede, absolutely.
And because it's not about that, it was fast then and now it's not. It's like, yeah, it was fast then and it was all these things, but it was just so darn fun. It can be slow now and it's still just as
And it had no ABS and no traction control.
None of the things you want a car to have did it have. Yeah.
It had air conditioning and power windows, and that was about it.
I had a 6-disc CD changer in the trunk of my Beetle.
I also put one in the Mustang.
Did you see?
Yeah, because I had a Pioneer 6-disc CD changer in my apartment.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm going to go ahead and get they had the one that goes in the trunk. I got one of those and put it in the trunk of the Mustang.
I paid extra for that. So when I wanted to change the CD, I had to open the trunk from the CD.
But you had 6 CDs in
it. I had 6 whole CDs of music to listen to.
And your Beetle had a flower vase.
That's
right.
Your Mustang did not have.
I had a flower vase that I would occasionally, I was that dork. I'd change out the flowers. So like a Christmas.
You didn't put like a silk flower.
It's a silk flower.
Oh, silk flower. Okay.
You can't put a real flower
in it.
It dies in 2 seconds because like the heat or the cold, it's done. But you could put a season, like a spring flower in. It was initially yellow. Like,
I've seen lots of beetles with the people have put flowers in.
Yeah, you
just have to have a garden.
Yeah, but they don't. A real flower is not going to survive.
Every day you put a new real flower in, and then you watch it die, and then
how sad that would be. You go to work, you have a nice little fresh flower, you come out of work, death. Like, I wouldn't want that.
Well, isn't that kind of how you feel sometimes?
I guess it would be accurate how you feel when you come out of an office sometimes.
You just screw it up, throw it on the ground, don't forget that.
Dang, stomp, dream's gone.
And then start fresh the next day.
Start fresh the next day. Let's try again.
No, every day.
All right. Well, Jordan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
This was great fun.
Thank you for having me.
We'll have to do it again sometime.
On the next Grand Wagoneer Drive.
Yeah, or hopefully sooner than that.
Probably something else. Yeah. It'd be great. Thanks for having me.
All right.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.